Support for this show comes from Sylvan Learning. When children love learning, they can tackle any challenge life throws at them. Sylvan's Insight Assessment can help you determine if your child is ready for what's ahead. It can also identify gaps in learning and point out areas that could be of concern for your child so they can tackle what's to come. And right now, it's the best price of the year at $29. Go to sylvan29.com to learn more and get your child's assessment for only $29. That's sylvan29.com.
Giants fans, and welcome to the Valentine's Views podcast here on Big Blue View Radio, part of your SB Nation family of podcasts. I'm your host, Ed Valentine of Big Blue View, and we're coming to you today on Tuesday, September 27th, day after the Giants lost to the Dallas Cowboys on Monday Night Football. Just a reminder, wherever you listen to podcasts, please subscribe to Big Blue View Radio to check out my show and the Chris and Nick show as well. And if you're watching on YouTube, like, share, subscribe there as well. All right, with me today, as has become customary this season on the day after games, is Big Blue View's Tony Del Genio as we break down Monday night's game. Tony, how you doing today?
I'm doing well. How about you?
I'm hanging in there. It's been a crazy couple of days. It's always hectic. Game days are always crazy. Monday night football games are always crazy. It's a long, long day. You know, Monday night football games. I'm too old for these, Tony. You know, I'm too old to work until 3:30 or 4 in the morning. But
I remember days of staying up late to work, and
But it is what it is, and we have to start with the news that we heard today regarding Sterling Shepard. And it was pretty obvious last night when we saw the injury that he suffered. It was pretty obvious that this was not a minor injury, and Brian Daboll confirmed today that Shepard did indeed suffer a torn ACL. He will be out for the season. He will be placed on injured reserve. And, you know, I could tell walking around the Giants locker room last night that players were as upset as they were about losing the game. I think a lot of guys that have been with Shep for a while were more upset about Shepard's injury than they were about losing the game, just which speaks to the kind of guy that he is and how important he's been to that room.
Well, he's the longest tenured Giant, and he's been a great player for them over the years. I mean, not just a good receiver, but a good blocking receiver, which, you know, not that many receivers are. And it's got to be just heart-wrenching to go through all of that rehab for an ACL and then come back, and several games in, all of a sudden you've got it again. And
right. Yeah, he had the first one was an Achilles. So yeah, last year was an Achilles, but you're absolutely right. I mean, to work as hard as he did to get back and then suffer another injury like this. And we said it last night, you know, those of us in the press box kind of looked at each other and said, you know, we might have just watched Sterling Shepard's career end.
Yeah, certainly you have to think that his career with the Giants ended, and maybe his career overall. I mean, you have to wonder what goes through his head after all the injuries he suffered through his career. You know, you rehab from this one just to get back to where you're walking, you know, normally again, and able to do simple things. And you say, you know, do I really want to even try to play football? Right. At this point, because his career has just been one injury after another, after another, after another.
Right. For the last few years, it definitely has been that way. It's been concussions and quad injuries and hamstring injuries and the Achilles injury and now this, and you know, you wonder if he'll look at it and say it's time to walk away. And even if he doesn't want to walk away, you wonder if anyone will give him a chance to try again. I would seriously doubt that the Giants would.
Yeah. I think at this point they've had so many injuries on their team and such bad health problems with their wide receiver core in particular that you have to think that they've got to go in a different direction next time.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it's funny because listening to Brian Daboll talk on Tuesday afternoon in his day after game press conference, he was asked about the turf at MetLife Stadium. And everybody, when they think about Giants injuries, everybody wants to blame something. They want to blame the training staff, or they want to blame the coaching staff, or they want to blame the strength coach, or and the field turf at MetLife Stadium is a popular thing to blame. But what do you blame for Shepard's injury last night, which was a non-contact injury suffered when he was jogging in a straight line? He didn't catch his feet in the turf. He didn't catch a cleat. He didn't twist an ankle or twist a knee or slip. He was jogging down the field and he popped an ACL. So yeah. There's nothing and no one you can blame for something like that. It just happened.
Yeah. I read somewhere that he might have twisted his knee on a previous play or something like that. I don't know if that's true or not. And maybe that just set him up for that. But obviously the play where he got injured itself didn't look like anything was catching in the turf or anything like that. He was just kind of, as you say, jogging along and it just gave out.
Right. Yeah. I had Brian Daboll referenced something about that today as well, that there might have been something, you know, a couple of plays before that, you know, when they watched the film, they looked at, you know, something that might have happened awkwardly with him a couple plays prior to that. But injuries are injuries. They're unfortunate. Best of luck to Shep. I mean, if he wants to continue to play, hopefully somebody gives him a chance, but hopefully, you know, he recovers. And it was, like I said, it was a tough scene in the Giants locker room last night. It was as we turn our attention to the game itself, it was kind of a sober scene in the locker room. You know, that after a 2-0 start, a lot of good feelings about the Giants, and you know, everybody was hoping for 3-0, maybe 4-0, because we've got Chicago coming up here this Sunday, and this was a bit of a reality check for the Giants in that they're not fixed. They have issues at wide receiver. Even before Shepard's injury, they have issues along the offensive line. They have depth issues on defense. And these are the kinds of things that aren't going to get fixed this year. They're just not, because Joe Shane, Brian Daboll have only had one off season. It's going to take time to fix some of those issues, and the Giants are just going to have to work around some of the things that we've seen through 3 weeks.
And, you know, being realistic about it, the Giants are not a contending team right now. I mean, I got caught up in it as much as anyone. You imagine the possibility of them winning this game and going to 3-0 with, as you say, the chance of 4-0 next weekend before they have to go overseas to play Green Bay. And you say, wow, could it be? Could they possibly actually sneak into the playoffs this year? But everybody knows that the Giants are not really a contending team. And so when you see all the injuries, you have to take it a little bit with a grain of salt. Compare the Giants situation, for example, to, say, the LA Chargers, who obviously saw themselves as a contender not only to win their division but to go and make noise in the playoffs, because they have all the confidence in the world in their quarterback, and rightly so. And they added free agents this year and have made several good draft choices to improve their offensive line and so on and so forth. And then all of a sudden, 3 weeks into the season. They're 1-2. Herbert's got an injury that's going to linger all season. Other guys, Rashawn Slater's out for the year. Other guys are injured on the line. All of a sudden, you know, the sky is falling for them. That's a team that's really affected by injuries, because this was a year they thought they might actually have a chance to really make some noise. As Giants fans, you know, I think we know that the best we could hope for this year is to get to respectability. And if you want to sneak into the playoffs with a 9-8 record or something like that, and then lose in the first round or something, well, then, you know, that would be a tremendous season for the Giants. But realistically, we're in a rebuilding mode. And so while last night was a disappointment, and the injury is a disappointment among the other injuries, they can afford it now more than they might be able to afford it a year or two from now.
Well, when you have to take a big picture look with the Giants, and it's very easy to get caught up in week to week, you know, what happened, the sort of recency bias, I guess the last thing that you saw is the most important thing. And with this version of the New York Giants, it's probably not. I mean, if you take a big picture look, you've got to be happy that they're 2-1 after 3 weeks. I think even regardless of what happens on Sunday against the Bears, I think if you told Giants fans that the Giants would be 2-2 after 4 weeks, I think Giants fans would have signed up for that, because the Giants haven't sniffed 500 in a long time. They haven't, you know, they haven't played respectable football in years now. I mean, it's been five consecutive double-digit loss seasons. They entered this season and tied with the Jets for, you know, worst record in football since 2017. So I think if you look at the big picture, there are still, you know, signs of progress. It's easy to look at the things that happened last night, and, you know, Evan Neal struggled, the offensive line struggled, the wide receivers are a mess. There, you know, Leonard Williams is hurt, Aaron Robinson's hurt. There's no depth on defense. It's easy to look at it and say the sky is falling. I think it's harder to look at it and identify the things to feel good about. And there are some, there are still some, you know, two wins in three games is nothing to sneeze at. So I think if you look at the big picture, it still feels to me like some progress is being made, but this team, this roster is a long way from where Joe Shane and Brian Daboll want it to be.
And, you know, you say playing respectably, the fact is, last night, their offensive line was dominated by the Cowboys' defensive line. Not surprising, because the Cowboys' defensive line is one of the best in the NFL. The Cowboys' offensive line mostly dominated the Giants' defensive line, particularly. Well, I'd say both against in run and pass, and the Giants' wide receiver situation is a mess. Yet, with a couple of minutes to go in the game, Giants were down 7 with the ball.
Right.
With a chance to tie. So,
right.
You know, as poorly as things went in several areas last night, they weren't blown out by this team. And they're hanging in games. They're a tough, gritty team. I thought Daniel Jones played one of the best games I've seen him play as a Giant last night, even though the stats don't necessarily show it. And, you know, I thought Saquon Barkley, he really looks like the old Saquon Barkley now. There are good things to see. And this is not a terrible team anymore.
No. And Tony, let's talk about Daniel Jones a little bit. It's funny, because I did a radio show on Tuesday morning before I came home from New Jersey, and Jones was a big topic of conversation. You know, it was another game last night. When you look at the stats, no touchdown passes, threw an interception, less than 200 yards passing, still doesn't have a 200 yard passing game this year. You can look at the stats and not be impressed. You can look at the fact that the Giants scored 16 points, one touchdown, and say, oh, you know, Daniel Jones, he's terrible. He's got to be replaced. And the reality of it is that he may not be the answer at quarterback. But I looked at Jones last night and my, you know, what do you expect the guy to do last night? You know, he was hit. He was sacked five times. He was pressured. I don't know. Next Gen Stats had it at, you know, 40% of his passes when he wasn't sacked. He was pressured. And I think it was a lot more than that. The Giants' best offense last night, for the most part, was Jones running for his life and, you know, turning it upfield. And I think he ran for first downs four different times. You know, I don't know. You know, to me, last night doesn't say, oh, Daniel Jones is a star and he's the quarterback for the next 5 years. But I don't think you can look at last night's game and complain about what Daniel Jones did last night, because with what was going on around him, I don't know how much more the guy could have done.
Yeah, I thought he was heroic last night. Now I'll leave myself open to the people who analyze film, who during the week will show us what he did and did not do. And maybe there were downfield receivers open all night and he just wasn't seeing them and throwing to them. You can't see that on a TV broadcast very easily. But from what I could see, as you say, he was running for his life the entire time. And I thought he played his butt off trying to make plays, not exposing himself to risk all that often. He made a couple of beautiful throws, the pass completion to Richie James along the sideline being, I think, the number one. I thought he really looked great last night. And again, you have to ask, you know, well, who's the opponent? And if you look at the opponent, the Dallas Cowboys have played three games. They've yet to give up 20 points to anyone, and that's against Tampa Bay and against Cincinnati. They've held both of those teams under 20 points, and the Giants got 16 on them. And again, they had the ball. And if not for another one of these ridiculous downfield offensive pass interference penalties, the second week in a row the Giants have been caught on one of those, you know, maybe they would have been in position to score more points in this game. So I don't see this as a terrible performance by any means by Daniel Jones. I'm not saying that I think he's the answer. I'm pretty sure they're going to wind up going quarterback shopping next year. But Daniel Jones is a quarterback who belongs in this league, and he's a quarterback who can do some damage. I was watching a little clip from one of the morning shows this morning with Jeff Saturday, the ex-Colts lineman on it, and he was saying, you know, Josh Allen wasn't Josh Allen until he got Stephon Diggs. Tua wasn't Tua until he got Tyreek Hill. And he had one more example of that, of how adding a top flight receiver made a big difference to the quarterback. Well, I'm not saying that Daniel Jones will ever turn into Josh Allen. I think the odds of that are very, very small. But he hasn't had anything close to a Stephon Diggs or a Tyreek Hill the entire time. And if you look at who he's got now and who he's going to have for the rest of the season, you know, he's got a bunch of never beens, has beens, and the walking wounded that he's got to throw to at the moment. And I don't know how much you can expect. I don't think you're going to get too many of those 400 yard performances, even if the offensive line shores up.
Right. So let's talk about that wide receiver group a little bit. Obviously Shepard down for the season. Obviously the Giants have tried. Dave Gettleman tried. Joe Shane has tried to upgrade that group of playmakers. You go back. I mean, you look at this roster. Gettleman drafted Darius Slayton in the fifth round a couple years back. Big money spent on Kenny Golladay. A first-round pick spent on Kadarius Toney. Even this year, Joe Shane drafting Wandale Robinson in the second round. And what are we looking at? We're looking at a Kenny Golladay who's obviously not the player that Dave Gettleman paid for. And I don't know if that's just if he just doesn't fit in New York. I don't know if physically he's not the same guy that he used to be. Wandale Robinson hasn't been able to get on the field. Kadarius Toney seems like he's never on the field. So yeah, the Giants are throwing the ball to David Sills and Richie James and I don't know who else at this point, but mm-hmm. you know, but that wide receiver core and as I said earlier, that's just not going to get fixed this season. It's you're not going to be able to fix it mid-season on the fly. So it's disappointing because I think on paper, when training camp started, I think we all would have said, or we all would have been optimistic that that group of playmakers together, you know, might have given the Giants something, but obviously right now that doesn't look to be the case.
Yeah. And you have to wonder going forward, you know, who are the wide receivers on the 53 even going to be? And the options aren't great out there since the Giants only have a few million dollars in cap space to spend. I mean, there was all this talk about them looking into Cole Beasley, and you could imagine Cole Beasley coming back and reuniting with Brian Daboll. That would have made sense, except for the fact that Cole Beasley doesn't want to play for a league minimum salary, which you can't blame him at this point in his career for holding out for something better. And so, you know, that's not going to happen. No, well, who else are they going to do? Are they going to re-sign Alex Bachman? Well, let's say they do. Alex Bachman didn't make the 53 in the first place, and so it's not as if he's going to be a miracle worker. They're going to bring back John Ross from last year. Well, I actually liked John Ross last year. He made a couple of really nice plays for the Giants, but he's another guy who throughout his career can't stay on the field because he's always injured. So you know, how are they going to fill out the wide receiver room on this team for the rest of the season is going to be really interesting week by week story.
Right. And the elephant in the room when it comes to wide receiver and the guy that people always want to talk about and Giants fans always want to talk about, the elephant in the room, and you're laughing because you know where I'm going, Tony. The elephant in the room is Odell Beckham Jr. And I'm just going to say this. There's virtually zero chance that Odell Beckham returns to the New York Giants this season. It's not going to happen. First of all, it's the same thing you mentioned with Cole Beasley. The Giants have virtually no cap space. Odell Beckham is not coming to the Giants on a one-year veteran minimum deal for $1 million. That's mm-hmm. not happening. And that's basically what the Giants have to offer. The other thing is Odell Beckham is, I think, 29 years old at this point. He's had two torn ACLs. He had the bad injury, you know, with the Giants before, you know, when he was still with the Giants. I think that was 2016 or 17 when he had that injury. I don't remember exactly. I think it might have been 17, but I'm not 100% sure. But he's had a lot of injuries. He's a guy who he sees his football mortality. It's a nice romantic story. Odell Beckham returns to the Giants, yada, yada, yada. But Odell Beckham is going to go someplace where the team he goes to has a chance to be playing in the Super Bowl at the end of this season. And that's not the Giants. I'm sorry. It's completely unrealistic to think that Odell Beckham, you know, would really want to return to New York.
Yeah. Yeah. And so then, you know, the question arises, and I don't claim to know the answer to this, but you know, what do they do for the rest of the season, not just to fill out the roster, but then how they call plays. And the thing that I'm wondering about is whether, contrary to Mike Kafka's and Brian Daboll's nature, whether they might just change their whole approach to offense, do a lot of 1-2 personnel there, emphasize the running game, maybe throw the ball to Barkley downfield a little more. Have two tight ends in the game and just not use the wide receivers as much as possible. Brian Daboll actually did run a decent bit of 1-2 personnel his first couple of years with Josh Allen, if I remember correctly, before Josh Allen became the Josh Allen that we knew today. I think he realized he had a limited quarterback. He didn't have great receivers on the team. And so he had a more conservative, heavy personnel set to run on offense. It'll be interesting to me just to see how they actually try to solve this problem, because the kind of freewheeling 1-1 throw the ball downfield type of offense that I think a lot of us would love to see the Giants do for a change, they just don't have the people to make that happen.
No, they don't. And it would look better. That wide receiver room will look better when Wandale Robinson is healthy, when Kadarius Toney is healthy. But right now we don't know when that's going to be. And our history with Kadarius Toney, of course, is if he's healthy now, that doesn't mean he's going to be healthy 5 minutes from now. So, it's hard to rely on, but, and the Golladay situation, you know, if people aren't clear on this right now, there have been a lot of reports with Golladay that the Giants have been trying for quite a while now. They've been open to the idea of trading Golladay, and they've been open to the idea of swallowing a lot of the money that Golladay is owed in order to get that done, in order to move on from Kenny Golladay. And to this point, even with a willingness to take on a lot of that money, they have not found any takers. Now, maybe that changes as we get later in the season and teams get injuries and they figure out that they really need a wide receiver, you know, down the stretch to make a playoff run. But right now, that just has not been something that Joe Shane's been able to make happen. And the other thing people have to realize, they say, well, just cut him. And again, it comes back to cap space. You know this one, Tony. He's got a $21 million cap hit. Giants have $5 million in cap space. That cap goes up to $25 million in change. So if they cut him outright. So they spend 80% of their remaining cap space just to cut the guy. Mm-hmm. And they just can't afford to do that. So if they're going to move on from him this year, they've got to find somebody willing to take him, and they'll have to eat most of the money.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Yeah. And I'm sure they don't have any problem. I'm guessing anyway, not that I know, but I would guess that they have no problem eating the money. I think it's the cap space that you refer to. The fact that there's about $4.5 million in 2023 obligation to Golladay that accelerates into 2022 if you cut him. And so if you trade him, regardless of how much of his contract the Giants take on, is there a way to do the finances so that whatever they take on doesn't count against the 2022 cap? And I would guess that has to be very high in Joe Shane's mind, because he can't get rid of that $5 million in cap space that they have there, or else they're in a completely untenable position for the rest of the season. Of course, the other side of the story is, if the Giants want to get rid of Kenny Golladay so much, a guy who costs so much money, what team out there would actually be interested in taking him on to see him as a possible net asset? If the guy has actually lost whatever speed he has and can't get himself open at all or win 50-50 balls or anything like that anymore, what team's going to possibly be interested in him? So, you know, my guess is that he just remains a Giant for the rest of the season, because there's not an obvious path for me to see him leave.
Yeah, that could very well be true. Tony, let's talk about the offensive line a little bit. And you know, we know that the interior of the offensive line is a work in progress. They have a center who is probably here for 2022 and gone at the end of the year in John Feliciano. They have a work in progress at left guard with Ben Bredesen, with third round pick Josh Azudu, with Shane Lemieux still on IR. So, and again, what the Giants need is another offseason when they've got draft picks, when they've got some money to spend to supplement that group. You're not going to find the perfect answer to that this year, you know, unless one of those guys that's currently on the roster steps up and plays above the level they've played at so far. But I think the guy we really need to talk about is Evan Neal. And, you know, people on Twitter last night are going crazy. Evan Neal's a bust, and Evan Neal stinks, and the Giants shouldn't have drafted this guy. And if you thought Evan Neal was going to go through his career and never play a bad game, if you thought there weren't going to be growing pains, then you pretty much ripped Van Winkle Andrew Thomas's rookie season. I mean, look at what Andrew Thomas is right now in his third NFL season. Andrew Thomas was the worst tackle in football 2 years ago. He graded as basically the worst offensive tackle in football, and look at where he is now. I continue to look at Evan Neal and say, you know, a bad game last night against a tremendous team. I mean, DeMarcus Lawrence has made a lot of offensive tackles look bad for a very long time. And the Cowboys are, as you've said, a really good front, and they took advantage of the kid last night. And I think he'll grow from it. I think he'll learn from it. I can't look at Evan Neal and say, oh my God, the Giants made a mistake drafting this kid.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you know, you mentioned Andrew Thomas, and as I know you're well aware, for the second consecutive week, Andrew Thomas is the highest graded offensive tackle in the NFL, according to PFF. His grade as of after three games is like something like 90.3. And it's not just first in the NFL. It's like 5 points higher than any other offensive tackle in the NFL. So he not only has become a good offensive tackle, he shows every sign of being now a great offensive tackle. I mean, we're talking about somebody who looks like he's headed to the Pro Bowl this year, if not all pro as left tackle. And saying that for like left tackle, which is one of the most difficult positions to play, is really something. Yet, as you say, he looked awful that rookie year. And there were a lot of things that contributed to that. But the fact is, he has grown so much in two seasons after that it's just amazing to see. You watch the film and guys are just not getting past him hardly at all. And so I'm very patient with Evan Neal. I understand he's got things to work on. Obviously his footwork isn't what it should be at this point. DeMarcus Lawrence beat him to the outside continually because he couldn't get out there and match him quickly enough, and he's got this problem of leaning over and losing his balance, which hurts him. He did run block well last night, which is good because early on he hadn't even run blocked well. But it's three games in. I'm willing to be patient with Evan Neal, especially since I know we're not on a Super Bowl mission this year. I just want to see him get established, slowly improve over the course of the season, and be a respectable tackle by the end of the year, and then we'll go from there. And as somebody mentioned, Evan Neal has played four different positions on the offensive line. In the worst case scenario that he never figures out how to play right tackle at an NFL quality level in the league, well, you could move him into guard, where the Giants obviously have a problem right now, and that's the solution for him. It's certainly not the desired solution. I want to see him become a stud right tackle the way Andrew Thomas has become on the left side. But I'm not worried about Evan Neal right now.
No, and you're nowhere near having to make that decision either. You're three games into this young man's NFL career. And, you know, I was in the locker room last night, and, you know, Evan Neal was a star high school player. He was maybe the best high school offensive lineman in the country. He was at Alabama a year ago. You know, he started at Alabama for 4 years. He was perhaps, you know, during his time at Alabama, the best offensive lineman in the country, at least, you know, toward the end of his time at Alabama. What happened to him last night has never happened to him before. And he was shell-shocked last night. He was sitting at his stool at his locker, surrounded by media, trying the best he could to answer questions. But this is one of those times when you're watching this young man speak and you kind of wish that your job didn't involve, you know, poking and prodding this young man after a game like that, because he wouldn't even look up from the floor. He was staring at the floor as he answered questions, and he wouldn't look up at anyone. You know, he was ashamed of his performance. He was trying to digest it, and he didn't make excuses for it. You know, he said he'd watch the film. He'd come back to work on Wednesday and try to get better. And what will worry me is if the Giants play the Cowboys at the end of the season and he's not better. He's not, I mean, not perfect, but if he doesn't you know, show some improvement by the end of the season. That would worry me. But right now, he's three games into his career. He had a bad game. You move on.
Yeah, and I have a hard time believing that so many people who scouted him could be completely wrong about the potential of this guy to succeed in the NFL. I mean, people who know tons more certainly than I do, because I'm not an expert on this at all. But you know, you have people like Duke Manyweather, who I think people respect pretty much as a judge of offensive linemen, and he thinks Evan Neal is gonna be great. Evan Neal was you know, one of the two or three highest ranked offensive tackles in the draft by virtually every draft analyst mm-hmm. out there. And yeah, by all indications from my vantage point on the outside of this, he has none of the head problems that, let's say, somebody like an Eric Flowers had when he came to the Giants. Okay.
Oh, and did we have to mention that name?
Well, but it's good as a read as a counterpoint. If people had doubts about Eric Flowers from the beginning, mm-hmm. and all he did was confirm those doubts, not just by his play, right. but by his mm-hmm. attitude,
right.
Things. And you see none of those things with
right. Neal. No, I have no doubt that Evan Neal will take the coaching from Bobby Johnson, from Brian Daboll, from Mike Kafka, and continue to work and be as good a player as he can be. And there are going to be bumps in the road. And last night was obviously one of them. Anyway, Tony, let's just close by spinning forward a little bit. You've got the Chicago Bears coming to MetLife Stadium on Sunday. And there's one, you know, key question. You know, will anybody playing on Sunday actually be able to complete a forward pass?
I was going to say, this is going to look like these old Giants Bears games from my childhood, I think. I think Justin Fields has only, I think, completed 23 passes in three games.
Giants fans want to complain about Daniel Jones, and yet the Chicago Bears have played three games. Justin Fields' highest passing yardage total in three games is 105 yards.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's just jaw-dropping in the modern NFL. But I think that when you think about the Bears, you know, I'll leave you with this, the big thing is, you know, that people are going to want to talk about is the trade the Giants made a year ago. And are the Bears happy with Justin Fields? I think the Bears did the right thing by moving up and taking that swing, because you always take the swing on the quarterback when you can, if you think you don't have the guy. I mean, the Giants are, you know, going to the end of the earth here to figure out if Daniel Jones is the guy or not. And I'm good with that. I'm okay with that. The Bears are taking their swing with Justin Fields. And yes, Kadarius Toney might not have been the right pick, but I still believe that trade was the right thing for the Giants to do. Mm-hmm. Because if you don't make that trade, you get Kadarius Toney out of that trade. You get Aaron Robinson out of that trade. You get Daniel Bellinger, who's your starting tight end, out of that trade. And you get two first-round picks. So you can look at Kayvon Thibodeau and Evan Neal, and who knows how it would have worked out if the Giants had only had one first round pick this year. But you look at those two guys and you have to know that only one of them is a New York Giant if they only have one pick. Mm-hmm. So you have to look at the sum total of what the Giants got, you know, instead of taking Micah Parsons or Rashawn Slater with that pick. And I think that in the long run, you know, if Kayvon Thibodeau and Evan Neal are Pro Bowl caliber players, then it's a wash and everything else is a bonus.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And You know, and as far as the Chicago Bears are concerned, I would have made that trade if I were them. I had no problem with Dave Gettleman making that trade from the Giants standpoint. I thought that was it was great to actually see him accumulate more draft assets, including a number one. But I would have made that trade if I were the Bears too, because as you say, when you see the chance to take a swing on a quarterback, you do it. And Justin Fields might turn out, I mean, he's a dangerous quarterback, actually, at this point, mostly because of his legs, but he's got a strong arm too, and he can hurt you downfield. But the Bears, just like the Giants, have a wide receiver core that you kind of scratch your head and say, well, you know, who's going to catch the ball and score for this team? There's potential there. They've got players like Darnell Mooney, but you know, they're in a tough spot right now, and Justin Fields might be the answer, might not be an answer. But whenever you take a swing for a quarterback, that's the case. There are no sure things in drafting quarterbacks in the NFL.
Right. Absolutely not. Well, you know, Tony, we'll have a chance to see the Giants again on Sunday in just a few short days. We'll see if they get to be, if they get to 3-1 or if they're 2-2. And, you know, either way, there'll be a work in progress, and you and I will be back, doing this again next week.
Looking forward to it.
All right, Giants fans, thank you as always for listening. Please stay safe out there, take care of each other, and we'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.